Psalm 55. It's a longish psalm, but it'll actually be quicker than either of the other two. The psalmist is clearly terrified. Anarchy rules in the city. Put yourself in Iraq. We've got parishioners here from Iraq, and the father of the parishioners, of the husband, is right next door to the Green Zone. Right adjacent to the Green Zone. His father and mother. They never go out of the house. They never go near a window. They just go from room to room. Inside is just far too dangerous. I suppose one of the young kids must sneak out and get some food for them. That's how they are, thanks to the liberation of Iraq. Anarchy is ruling in the city. If he could run away from it, he would. And you think of where anarchy might be in your life, and it could be in any of our lives at different times. But he can't run away from his real world. Even his closest friend has turned against him. And there's only one to whom he can turn, and that's Yahweh, to whom he pleads throughout. And in the final verse, he asserts his trust in God. So in the psalm, he kind of comes to that point, which we can often do in prayer. We start one place, and with grace, we kind of get to somewhere else, like Jesus did in the agony. Work our way through to not my will but thine be done. As we listen to the psalm, we might reflect on Jesus in his agony. There might be one way of praying it, or yourself in your agony. Here it is. Hear my prayer, O God. Do not shut yourself away from my pleading. Attend to me and answer. With my cares I cannot rest. I tremble at the clamour of the enemy, at the cries of the wicked. I think, verse 3, calamities press me down and overwhelm me. Furies attack me. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fear and trembling come upon me, and horror overwhelms me. So he's in a really bad state. And we've probably all been there. So here's a few other examples from Jesus' life that might pick it up. John doesn't have the agony in the garden in his account of the Gospels. It's not that he's saying it didn't happen, he just doesn't bring it in. But this is the nearest verse that gets to it. Just before the Last Supper, chapter 12, verse 27, Jesus says, now my soul is troubled. When you read John's Gospel, you've got to read it with great care. It was the Gospel most used by the Gnostics. It was the last of the Gospels to be accepted in the canon as authentically inspired, because it's beautiful, but it's actually quite dangerous on its own, because it's not intending to present the Jesus of history to us. It's actually intending to penetrate through love into the mystery of the Word that is seen revealed in this human Jesus. So the focus is on the divine throughout. And that's a beautiful thing, that it is there, that focus. But you better have Mark in your left hand when you've got John in your right, or you'll go off with the Gnostics. And you'll have a divine Jesus who's not human if you're not careful. So you need the whole lot. So here it is. Here's Jesus. My soul is troubled. It's one of the few times that John even allows us into the psyche of Jesus, the human Jesus, I mean. Jesus was troubled in spirit. Another one, John, verse 13, and declared, very truly I tell you, one of you will betray me. Jesus took with him Peter, this is Matthew now, and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be grieved and agitated. The word used in Mark's Gospel, I'm told by the scholars, the Greek word used in that situation is the strongest word in Greek. He broke down, like it was a psychic breakdown that he had. And he said to them, I'm deeply grieved even to death. Remain here and stay awake with me. If you're reading Matthew, this is the year of Matthew, isn't it? If you're reading Matthew's Gospel, just watch for how many times the word "with me" occurs throughout the Gospel. It's quite amazing. It's a very... You remember he will be called... end of time, and throughout the Last Supper, it often comes here at his example. Stay awake with me. It's a very communal, community gospel. With. Companion, I hope you know, the word in English means com. Panis is bread. A companion is one who eats, breaks bread with you. It's a meal. Luke 22 has this: in the anguish Jesus prayed more earnestly, sweat became like great drops of blood pouring down upon the ground. Now back to our psalm, verse 6. This is what he's thinking, and hands up anyone who hasn't ever thought this. No, but I mean, if only I had the wings of a dove, I could fly away and find rest. I'd escape far away and take refuge in the wilderness. I'd hurry to find a shelter from the raging wind and devouring tempest, from the raging torrent of their lying tongues, O Lord. And all this raging tempest, it's easy, I'll speak as a celibate, could be your wife, you know, could be your husband, it could be your teenage kids, it could be the parish priest, it could be, you know, any situation you're in which is just too hard at the moment, and now you're thanking God you didn't run away, I'm thanking God I didn't run away. But if I had had wings, I'd have been out. Just remember about that. And look at this. This is the situation described powerfully. I've put it in capital letters for you to see. Please note there are seven. That's not accidental, I don't believe. What art we're dealing with? Seven. Seven is fullness. Seven branch candlestick. It comes from the moon, you know, the phases of the moon, the 7 days before you get to the etc. And this is what's going on. This is what he sees. I see violence and strife in the city. Day and night, they, and this they, of course, are enemy soldiers, they patrol high on the city walls. So you're in, where was that ghetto? Warsaw. You're in the Warsaw ghetto, and you've got Nazis, and the trams going by, and there's no way out. You're tunneling through sewers to try and make an escape. So they're high on the city walls. Crime and injustice flourish inside. You're in Baghdad now. Not only Baghdad, but maybe in the western suburbs of Sydney at the moment. Ruin is in its midst. Cruelty and fraud are present wherever you go. That's pretty modern stuff. That's what he was experiencing. And then look at Jesus. The end of his big long journey to Jerusalem. Luke has 9 chapters of the journey to Jerusalem. It's actually a catechism of discipleship. He takes the occasion of the journey to Jerusalem to tell us how to journey with Jesus. It's a wonderful 9 chapters that are special to Luke. Half it comes out of other gospels, reshaped and that. But a lot of it's just his own. And we've come to the end of the journey. Jesus is going up to Jerusalem. He sees Jerusalem, and this is his first reflection on it. If you, Jerusalem, if only you'd recognized on this day the things that make for peace. But now they're hidden from your eyes. Indeed, the days will come upon you when your enemies will set up ramparts around you and surround you and hem you in on every side. Jesus could see it. He wasn't the only one who could see it. Anyone with eyes to see at the time could see what was going to happen if they still kept up this stuff against the Romans. They'll crush you to the ground, you and your children within you, and they will not leave you one stone upon another. Why? Because you didn't recognize the time of your visitation from God. You didn't listen. You didn't take the way of peace and forgiveness and reconciliation. And so that's Jesus' response to a similar situation. And here's the tragic bit, the pathos, verse 12. If it were one of my enemies who was insulting me, I could bear it. We all know this. If it were an opponent who was behaving insolently towards me, well, I could walk away. Hang up. But it's you, my own companion, my intimate friend, who's close. How close was the friendship between us? We walked together in harmony in the house of God. And there can't be any pain like the pain within a family, you know, that's children hurting parents and spouse, all of that. And anyone that's close to you that has turned against you, it's a terrible agony. And that's what he's suffering. And his prayer is, let death catch them by surprise. Let them go down alive to Sheol. Bury them alive is what he wants. So I don't know that he'd be a canonized saint if he was around, but and Jesus would have said, hey, take it easy. But there it is in the psalm. For evil dwells in their homes and in their hearts. And it's, the psalms have got all the passions of human beings in them, and so they should, because we sometimes would feel like that. Later we realise we shouldn't have. It would have been better. But you've got to be real. And if you feel like that, you feel like it. Well, so the psalms do. And there's no point of repressing the feelings. You've got to purify them. It takes a life to do that. Verse 16. As for me, this is what he's doing. I call upon God and Yahweh will save me. Evening, morning and noon, I utter my complaint. And I moan that he may hear my appeal. Redeem me, this is the appeal, redeem me unharmed from the battle that I wage, for many are arrayed against me. God, who is enthroned from of old, will hear me. He's talking to himself in a way, trying to bolster up his courage. Surely, God will bring them down because they don't amend their ways, nor do they fear God. They raise their hand against one who is bound to them by covenant. I made these promises and he just walked out on me. Or she walked out on me or these, whatever. We're bound in a covenant and it's thus violating their pledge. And this is good too. Their speech was softer than butter, but their heart was set on war. Their words sounded smoother than oil, but were naked swords. It's not bad poetry, is it? It's pretty. And here, just for your interest, is the Proverbs chapter 26, verse 23, a pretty powerful little proverb. Like the glaze covering an earthen vessel. So you've got this dirty bit of old clay that's fragile and everything, and it's glazed. Okay. Like the glaze covering an earthen vessel, are smooth lips with an evil heart. An enemy dissembles in speaking while harbouring deceit within. King Lear. No, Othello, better. Iago. What's Desdemona been up to, Othello? Sowing this dreadful stuff. Cast, to conclude, your burden on Yahweh. This is the advice of the psalmist, beautiful advice. Cast your burden, because it is, come to me all you who labour and are burdened. Cast it on Yahweh, he will sustain you, says the psalmist out of his own experience. He'll never permit the just to fall. Well, you need a long view for that. You need to see beyond death. You need to see beyond the crucifixion to the resurrection, or it doesn't make sense. But you need to see beyond that. The martyrs saw beyond it. You, O God, will cast them down into the lowest pit. The bloodthirsty and treacherous shall not live out half their days. Sorry, mate. Some of them lived a long, bloody time. But anyhow, that's his hope. The point of it is, I trust in you. And not unlike Jesus' words at the end of one of the discourses of the Last Supper, chapter 16. The hour is coming, said Jesus, indeed it has come, when you'll be scattered, each one to his home, and you'll leave me alone, said Jesus. But I'm not alone. My Father is with me. That's a very beautiful line. I've said this to you so that in me you may have peace. In the world you'll face persecution, but take courage. I have conquered the world.